got it down. Watch. You want to leave?
Sashi
Puki Chuxing Me Tok Trum Rira Bling Shin In Dig and Body Sangye Shing Du Li Te U Argi Jokun Am Dak Shing La Chupar Shuk Iram Guru Radha Mandala Kam Niryatayami
Sangye
Chudam Soki Choknam La Changchu Bardu Dakni Kapsuchi Daki Chenyen Gipe Sunam Ki Jola Penchu Sangye Jupasho
Sangye
Chudan Soki Choknam La Changchu Bardu Dakni Kapsuchi Daki Chenyen Gipe Sunam Ki Jola Penchu Sangye Jupasho
Sangye
Chudan Soki Choknam La Changchu Bardu Dakni Kapsuchi Daki Chenyen Gipe Sunam Ki Jola Penchir Sangye Jupasho. Coming right into meditation. Spine's tall and straight, starting with our normal scanning down the body from the crown of the head, slowly moving down to the soles of the feet and letting go of tension wherever you find it. There's nothing else to think about or let the mind jump to or go to the future. There's just right here. So choose that. Decide, I'm staying with this body scan. As you're scanning down, feel the tension of the day melt away. Mind back to the body scan whenever it wanders. By first releasing wherever your mind's jumped to, rejoicing that you're lucid, you're present again, and then returning to the body scan, relaxing there. once you reach the soles of the feet, scan back up the body. When you reach the crown of the head, come to your breath, wherever you feel it moving your body the most. Finding that balance of deeply relaxed physical state, but with a bright, clear mind. This bright, clear mind is focused on the movement of the body as it moves with your inhale and your exhale. Bring your mind back brightly to the breath. As though this were the last time you were ever going to get to meditate. Once you have the breath really brightly clear, gently release. Expand your awareness through the whole body, the arms, the legs. Sounds around you, the feeling of people, room. you're ready, you can start to move and open your eyes. Crazy, we end up getting done with meditation at the same time, even when we start late. Because we started like 3 or 4 minutes late, I think, and it's still just about exactly the same time that we end. But the meditation didn't feel shorter. It's the little clickers in here.
Oh, it's probably still in there.
Does it run out of batteries if it's left on? Oops.
Yeah, probably.
All right. Okay, we're on class 7 of the Karma Course. We only have this one and then 3 more.
So you're right. Last night we had 4 classes left.
Yeah, because she said 4 weeks, and I was like, well, it's this week.
And then 3 more weeks.
Yeah, so pretty close.
Open to interpretation.
Yeah, yeah. I didn't purposely say it incorrectly, but I was just like, yeah, it seemed like it was the right thing to me at that moment. So if you ever want more, well, of course you're going to want more than what we're doing in class, because there's so much that we're doing that there's a lot more to look into. But besides listening to Geshe Michael's teachings, which are mostly what we're doing here, but you get something different when you listen to him teaching. There's also Lama Maru on, I think you can still go to mahasukha.org or middlewayla.org. And Lama Maru taught Dharma Essentials, which are like the condensed version of these courses. So for the Karma Course, there's 4 classes, but they roughly line up. Like the first one's maybe 1 and 2, something like that. And so he goes over it a little faster, but he's an amazing teacher, and he uses different examples. He teaches differently. So it's really helpful to listen to him, too. I listened to him this last week a few times.
And you can get access to those on ACN Dharma too, the Dharma Essentials.
The ones that Lama Maru taught?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I think I have seen them on there.
Yeah, it's
yeah.
Maybe daily practices or something.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's probably easier. Okay. So we're basically doing... We are doing a deep dive into karma in these courses. And that really just... What karma really means is that our actions have consequences. Everything we do has consequences. And this isn't a foreign idea to us. This is how our society is based. You know, it's how society works. It's not really a stretch in a certain sense. For example, say I go and rob a bank. And I get away with the money, and I don't get caught. And then 2 weeks later, the cops come and figure out that I did it, and they come and get me. And I say, that was last week. I'm a different person now. Which technically I am, but that's not how it works. You know, I don't do that anymore. I did that 2 weeks ago or last week or whatever. So, and karma doesn't work that way either. Whatever we do, we see the consequences. And so that's why a lot of times things happen and we have no idea why. like in the robbery situation, it's like I robbed the bank and then I forgot I robbed it or something and they had me on tape. That would be more what it would be like with karma. Like the consequence comes back and I have no clue why it's happening. Like, I didn't do this. I've never done something like this.
So it feels like
that. It does. And of course, we all have, whether or not we remember it. Have we gone over, I don't even know if we've gone over the laws of karma in this class. Did we? We've gone over it so many other times, but just quickly, what's the first law of karma?
It's karma's fixed.
Mm-hmm, which means?
That the seed that you plant is similar to the result that you get.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Like, if you plant a seed, it will ripen. Like, it's not...
That
was a different law. Mm-mm.
Okay.
Okay, we'll go into that in a second. What's the second one?
What you plant is what
you get. That is the third or fourth.
Grows?
Mm-hmm. The second one is it grows. The third one, I think there's technically a way the third and the fourth are supposed to go, but I don't know which it is. I think the one that you said is the third one.
Yeah.
If you plant something, you get the result.
Yeah, and if you don't plant something, you won't get a result.
That's the fourth one. So the first one, karma is fixed, is basically if you plant something, you're going to see it grow. You're going to see a result from it. Like, planting a seed means it's going to ripen, unless we do the four powers, which isn't stipulated in there. But
I thought that it was the one where if you plant tomato seeds, you get a tomato plant. If you plant tomato seeds, you're not going to get a peach tree.
I think that is kind of a combo, because that's also number three. If you plant something, you will, in a way, to me, it's number three, too.
Mm-hmm.
But it's probably that as well.
Okay.
So I think that's in there. It's probably not as straightforward as it's taught a lot of times, because it'd be too confusing. But, yeah, that's the example that's used for the first one.
Mm-hmm.
So for the second one, that's why big things happen that we don't remember ever doing, because the seed grew. It got a lot bigger. We were maybe a little bit annoying, and we see some huge annoying person, and we think, I've never been that annoying, which is probably true. We've probably never been quite that annoying, but we have been annoying. It is. I think it's a relief sometimes, too, because you're thinking, okay, I planted this seed, but I was never that bad. And then if we plant the seed, we get the result. Which means any goodness that we do, we're going to see a result. Any badness we do, we're going to see a result. If we don't plant the seed, we're not going to see the result. So we can sit around waiting for something to happen for a time with no beginning. It will never happen if we don't plant the seed. So we might want, a new car or something like that. If we don't have the seed for a new car, if we don't plant it, we'll never see a new car. It'll never come. And I think we can kind of see this when we look around at other people, too. A lot easier than with ourselves. Like, we see our friends or family struggling for something, and if we look at it karmically, we can see how, oh, I know why she's not getting that, because she does this a lot. Not that we're going to tell this, our friends or family, but it's easier to see in other people. Like, of course you're not finding money because you're not generous. And of course there's past lives too, so we can't always tell, but it's easiest to start looking now in the things that we can see. Okay. So basically, to boil everything down in a way, we need to do a few things. We need to clean up our old past karma. So we talked about the four powers. And how do we know what we did in the past? By what our lives look like now. So if we have money problems, health problems, problems at work, trace it back and try to find the cause. And sometimes we can't find it. Maybe it was in the past life. So when we do a purification, we just think, okay, what is it that would be the cause of this? This thing that keeps coming up, what are the possible causes? And then we'll come to one and it'll feel like the right one and then purify that. Whatever that is. And then we just do the four powers over and over until we feel it's purified. And there'll be a point where you'll know. There'll be like multiple points where you'll try to want it to be done, but you know it's not. And so you keep doing it. And then at one point, there'll be a time where it's totally clear and it feels gone. And you feel like a lightness from it. And then if when things come back or they feel like they're not done, then you just purify again. It's like a search and destroy mission backwards. So I must have created the cause for this effect to occur because everything has a cause. And the main thing, we talked about this last week, I think, in cleaning up our karma is don't do that thing again. The restraint is a big part of it. And also, I like this, Lama Ru talked about this. He said that, we don't talk about this often, that we were incredible in our past lives to have our current life. No matter what we think is wrong in our current life, compared to most of the human beings living on this planet, our lives are amazing. And if we don't think they are, we're not paying attention. It's not because they're not. It's because we have gotten stuck in some way of thinking where, you know, we feel victimized or like things aren't working out, which can be easy to get like sucked into that because we're attracted to that negative way of thinking. But ultimately, we were like His Holiness the Dalai Lama or Mother Teresa in a past life to have the rebirth that we do in this life. And then we also studied how to make powerful karma, how to plant powerful seeds, and how to get our karma to work for us. We talked about that. And then we haven't talked about this specifically, but basically karma is operating under the idea of do unto others as you would have them do unto you. And so the most powerful motivation is altruism in anything that we do. To stop worrying about you, you'll be happy when you stop worrying all the time about how you're going to be happy. That's basically what it comes down to. When we start worrying about other people being happy, this will result very quickly in ourselves being happier. So thinking of others, I really like this idea. I've been thinking of this week. Has a kind of immediate protection for us. Just thinking of others, like walking down a deserted street and we feel fearful, we think of someone else and immediately we have protection in the way that, well, it helps immediately. It's also planting a karmic seed. But we've taken the you out of it, and we've put the mind somewhere else, and we immediately feel better. You guys have listened to Lama Ru? Okay. Have you listened to him?
No.
Okay. So this is what he says. He says, these are his words, which are funny because you can hear him saying it if you know him. He says to make a big fat bad karma for you, be a big fat selfish pig. he talks like that a lot. And when he says it, it just sounds great. He says get angry and that'll really do it. And we're going to talk about this more tonight too. So tonight is another one of the divisions of karma. So remember, the Abhidharma is coming from all different sutras to describe karma. What realm are we in? Who knows?
You know, at school.
Realm.
Human desire.
Desire realm. Yes. So how many of the beings in the Wheel of Life are in the desire realm?
How many types of beings or how many actual beings?
How many of the beings that are in the Wheel of Life are part of the desire realm? It's kind of a trick question.
All of them?
Yes, all of them. All of them are in the desire realm. So the hell beings, the craving spirits, animals, humans, demigods, pleasure beings, all of them in the desire realm. So none of those are what we're going for as a rebirth. We're going for this life, getting out of suffering, becoming Buddhas. So the pleasure beings exist in form and formless realms also. The beings of the two higher realms, the form and the formless, they don't and they can't commit bad deeds, mainly because they're in deep meditation. But they don't perform any new good deeds either at this level. And they have bad deeds from before, so when they use up all their good karma, then they go to the lowest house. They go to the lowest rebirths. Then there are pleasure beings that don't have a body in the formless realm. So they only have 4 of the 5 heaps. I don't quite understand how that works, but it is something that's taught from the scriptures. So we're going to talk about black and white karma. So say Nakpoy Le. Karpoy Le. Karnak Drepa. Sakme Kile.
Sakme Kile.
We'll go through one more time. Nakpoy Le.
Nakpoy Le.
Karpoy Le.
Karpoy Le.
Karnak Drepa.
Karnak Drepa.
Sakme Kile.
Sakme Kile.
Okay. So that's black karma, white karma, mixed karma, and unstained karma. So the first one, the Nakpoy Le, is called black karma because its essence is black and its result is black. And we mainly collect this kind of karma in the desire realm. This is mostly what we're doing. The essence, when it says the essence is black and its result is black, the essence means it has to do with mental suffering. It's causing suffering or it is suffering. And of the Four Noble Truths, it relates to the first two. What are the first two?
Life is suffering.
Mm-hmm. So suffering and there's a cause. And then the result is black because the result is suffering. So black karma is collected in the desire realm and it's non-virtuous. And then Karpoy Le, which is white karma, refers to virtuous karma of the form realm, not the desire realm. So the result is white or pleasure. The essence is white because the person doing the karma isn't suffering outright. There's no suffering body, but they still must age and die. Then Karnak Drepa, which Kar is white, Nak is black, Drepa is mixed together, refers to virtue in the desire realm. So the result is white or pleasure. The essence is black because the mind and body are suffering as we do the karma. And we can only do mixed black and white karma or black only in the desire realm. So black and white karma refer to both the result of the deed and the nature of the deed being done. It doesn't refer to good and bad deeds themselves. So we can do a good deed, but our nature is ultimately suffering in this realm, which is white and black, respectively. And then Sakme Kile, which is unstained karma. It's karma which doesn't have a white or black result, but which functions to remove the black karma. So an example of this is the direct perception of selflessness. Why are we saying selflessness?
Because
we're aligned with Yes. So what would we call it in our school? Because we're studying a lower school right now. So a pure virtue without a karmic ripening would be the example, direct perception of emptiness. That would be a pure virtue without a karmic ripening. It doesn't give a black or white ripening result. And this, you'll hear people kind of going back and forth when they talk about things that the Buddha does. In the scriptures, you don't hear it referred to as karma. Karma is usually talked about in relation to suffering. Like, as we're talking about the white and the black deeds done in the suffering realm, in the desire realm. So the whole karmic system, you don't really see referring to as the Buddha, or to things that the Buddha does. But according to Abhidharma, he must have movement of the mind. In the higher school, they say it must be motivated by a bad thought to have karma. There's different views in the different schools, as there is with most things. In the reading, it talks about bringing white karma and black karma to an end. So basically, why would you want to purify the white karma? Because you want to purify the desire that's in the desire realm. And from the class, Geshe Michael was talking about, it's not, you don't start with that purification. You do all of the negativities, and when you're getting closer and closer to enlightenment, then you get to that point where you're going to purify the white karma as well, because it still has an element of suffering in it. And apparently the desire realm is very hard to overcome. So after the path of seeing is when we recognize the faults of even the good things in our lives. I feel like we kind of start to realize it after studying a while too. Not in the same way, because we're still drawn to these things, but then there's some part of it that we get a little bit more. And then apparently this doesn't totally go away until the path of seeing, until we've seen emptiness directly. So that's why we're talking about wanting to get rid of white karma. What's the lowest motivation, like on the Buddhist path? That's the medium. Well, yeah, you could say.
Get a human rebirth.
The lower motivation basically just wants out of suffering in this life. They just want to get rid of suffering in this life. And then medium wants out of suffering completely. And higher wants to get themselves out and all others too. So renunciation and removing desire in this life, it's not beyond us. It's just a recognition that we have in our lifetime, by the time we're 30 or 35 or maybe 25 if we're lucky, that nothing works here. Nothing works the way we want it to. It doesn't work when we want it to. It doesn't work how we want it to. The things we want, even if they come to us, they don't satisfy us and then they leave. The things we don't want are coming all the time and then they stay too long, and It's just a constant cycle. And we realize it as we get older, and if we're lucky, when we're younger too. Because then that's what motivates us to practice and find a different way to live and to be that's going to lead towards some happiness and ultimately freedom. And it's not that the things that we get aren't pleasant in some way. It's the fact that they don't last. A lot of times it seems like the pleasure is really just being free of the desire of wanting the thing when you get it. It's not even really from whatever we get. So there's kind of like this window where it's like, oh, I'm free of the desire. And then there's some other desire that takes over, probably of the thing to stay or to remain the way it is, that sort of thing. And it's a natural thinking person's desire to get out of pleasure that always goes sour, that always turns bad. It makes sense. You know, after things happening so many times, oh, I know what's going to happen here. I've had this good thing come to me, and they always go bad. That's what's going to happen here. So then it's not that we don't enjoy it or we're not able to have good things. It's just we have a different relationship where we're not dependent on that thing. We're not dependent on our iPhone working exactly the way we want it or our computer being fast and like super, you know, super quick when we type anything in. We know that our happiness doesn't come from that. Oh yeah, this is how things work here. This is how karma works. This is how things go. And it's not like a everything's crappy and it sucks type thing. It's just it's a way of working with our world while we're on our way to Buddhahood, where we're not so blown around by every little thing that happens. And the more privileged we are, which is probably all of us, the smaller the thing that blows us around. It's like someone slights us in some tiny way this happened to me, by like standing too close to us in line. And that's like not okay. Or someone drives a little too slow or pulls out in front of us. And immediately they are the enemy. They're not a good person. They cut me off in some way. Even if there's more than enough room, they should not have gotten out and driven in front of me. So it's not like, for renunciation, it's not like we have to give up something nice. We're giving up some crappy thing that's not making us happy anyways. But in a way, Lama Ru talks about this too. Not in this class, but now I'm thinking about him. It's like we have this burning coal. I think this is an example given in the scriptures. This burning coal, which is all the suffering in this life. And we're grabbing onto it so tightly, and we're saying like, ow, this hurts so badly, and someone's saying, let go of the coal, and we're like, no, it's my coal, I want this. That's what, that, you know, in a way, that's what we're doing with our life. Is it? Yeah. It's a very good analogy. Have you guys seen Kung Fu Panda? Oh my gosh, it is. It's so cute. Have you seen it? It's so adorable. That's his like master, his teacher. I don't know what he is. Like, is he an actual animal? Oh yeah. We saw a red panda at the zoo. Oh, they're really cute.
They're like hanging over the limbs. Mm-hmm.
Napping.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So now we've talked about how the crappy things in this life that we have aren't making us happy. So now we're going to talk about how to remove desire for this life. Say jikten pe lam.
Jikten pe lam.
Jikten le de pe lam.
Jikten le de pe lam.
So the first one is the worldly path. So these are two ways to remove desire for this life. Number one, the worldly path. In the worldly path, you get into deep states of meditation and move up from the desire realm through each of the four levels of the form realm and the formless realm. And there's, I don't remember learning this before, but so there's a causal form realm and a resulting form realm. You can do meditation in this life where your body stays in the form realm, but your mind starts moving to the form and formless realm levels. And this is different than taking a birth in that realm. So based on where you spend the most time in meditation, you will take a birth in that realm. Meditation comes from the causal form realm, and then rebirth is the resultant form realm. So I don't know if we want to go into that yet. So basically what this is saying is if we hang out in the form realm, which is, I don't think I've been there, but apparently it's a very pleasant meditation, physically pleasant, like mentally very pleasurable. So we want to have that ability because it's the second level of the form realm where we can see emptiness directly and start to get off of the cycle of suffering. But we need to have the balance of all of the study to know what we do when we get to that realm. So if we don't, we just hang out there. And then that's how you end up taking a birth in the form realm, which is not where you want to be. It's the one we were talking about where you use up all your good karma. You don't plant any more good seeds. And then you go to the lowest hell when you run out. So it's not just meditating and being able to get to this realm. It's knowing what to do when you get there. And if we meditate more than 45 minutes a day, our mind will eventually comfortably reach this state. It'll reach these different levels. Our mind will move through the four levels of each realm, and then our mind and our meditation becomes progressively more subtle. So how it works is we get used to the first level of the form realm, and then we get a little taste of the second level. And the first one looks bad. It doesn't look so good anymore. And then we go to the second and we stay there. We totally let go of the first. And then we get a taste of the third. And then the second where we are starts to look kind of rough. So we leave that one. We go to the third. And we keep moving up these levels and letting go of desire for the ones before. And it's like this in our lives too in different ways. It's like pay at work when we first get a job. Like when I first got my position at CalPERS, it seemed like so much money to me because I had been going to school before and, you know, working part-time. And it was so great for a little bit. And then I get like a little raise and it feels like so much. And so I completely let go of the last amount I was making, and I grasp onto this and think it's great for a little while. And then at another point, I'll get another raise, and I'll keep letting go of the last. So that's kind of what it's like moving up through the realms. So that's the worldly path. And I think this is really interesting that Geshe Michael talked about this. I don't think I've heard this before. He says it's very common for Westerners to mistake that for giving up desire. So you might see this, or think you see this in people around you maybe who are studying. And he says it's very dangerous because we don't actually give up desire. The example he gives is we go on a retreat and come back, this, you know, whoever it is, and they don't have desire for food as much or movies, or they think they're making, or they're able to study easily for a while, and they think they're making a lot of spiritual progress, And the reason it's dangerous is because you don't actually give up the desire. You move beyond them for a little while, but it's not permanent. It's like when you hear people say, oh yeah, I'm done with that. And you're thinking, how can you be finished with that? I know you're not finished with that. What it looks like to me is you've been studying for a year and you've kind of moved on to a different desire. Mm-hmm. So you're latching on to different things and you think, oh, I'm done, so I don't have to work on that anymore. Which I can see how that can be dangerous. It's like thinking you're done with the path when you're not done with the path. Like, oh, I'm already done with that. I don't need to work on that anymore. Mm-hmm. I'm finished with anger. Mm-hmm. I'm finished with all of these things. And we're not finished with any of them. Otherwise, we wouldn't be suffering anymore. Mm-hmm. So the 10 non-virtues especially, we're doing them all the time. And they get way more subtle as we're practicing, for sure. But I don't think they're completely gone until we see emptiness directly. And then we understand how things are working. So it's kind of a caution not to fall asleep at the wheel. You know, oh, I'm done with anger. I don't get angry anymore. Not true at all. All of us have anger in some form. It might be very slight irritation at a certain point, and it does get smaller by practicing. But it's not like we just forget about it and don't need to pay attention to it anymore. Because then it seems like if we're not watching out for it, something big will just come up and like attack us, and we'll have a huge thing of anger out of nowhere because we're not paying attention. That's what comes to mind for me. And we'll see this in our own practice. It doesn't mean we're not making progress, but we'll go on a retreat and come back and like for a little bit we don't feel like picking out all the time or something, or sitting and watching a lot of TV all the time, that sort of thing. And then eventually we end up the same as we were. So in that sense, it's good to keep going on retreats because that kind of gets new habits going. But it's also, I don't know what else to say about it. I've seen this, though, in other people. And I can't say for sure what their experience is. They might be done with it. But from where I'm sitting, it seems like, really, I don't think you're done with that.
Well, it's like this desire, this anger you've had for lifetimes and lifetimes. You study for a year and like...
And it's completely like, gone.
There's nothing else in our life that we would think that happens.
It's like turning... It's like there's an intruder in your house. Your house is your mind and your body. Mostly your mind. And you just decide, oh, they're gone. But they're not. They're there and they're like stealing all your stuff. That sort of thing.
Or like you say they're not there, but then you leave all your windows open. And like...
Yeah. Yeah, so you let your defenses down.
It sounds like giving up habits in an ignorant way. Like,
yeah.
I find that with myself. You know, like, I'll catch my mind, like, I'm not doing that anymore. But then the because part is like, do you know what I mean? It's like, yeah, if you're not coming from a place of seeing emptiness, then it's always going to be this ignorant reason that you're like...
Yeah, it'll always be mixed. Yeah. And I think what you're saying, too, is there's this knowledge of the way it would be helpful to the spiritual life in there, too.
Yeah.
But then we feel... I think this is negativity bias, too, because I do this, too. But then we feel like we're really doing it for this ignorant reason.
Right.
Which we might be mostly, but then we're also doing it for the other, which is really good, too. Like, there's some wisdom in there. Oh, I know this will be good for my practice.
Yeah.
And I really want to do it, too, or something like that.
Or, like, thinking, you know, like, I'm giving up sugar because... And then giving, like, the scientific reason for it. But so in that, you're thinking that X, Y, and Z is coming from sugar.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And not thinking about the emptiness.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's tricky, too, because there are, which we don't study that much, but there are causes and conditions, too.
Yeah.
You know, like, when I... Yeah, so it's hard not to get sucked into wrong worldview more and more. Because when I eat a lot of sugar, it does seem like most of the time my skin really breaks out. But then that, I know ultimately that's not the cause of it, but then I'm acting as though it is because it seems to work most of the time.
Yeah.
So it's tricky. So like to add in there, I've been good with this with when I take my allergy medicine. Okay, I'm going to take this, and then I try to remind myself every time, I think I do it most of the time, that if this works, it's because I have the seeds for it to work. It's not because of the allergy medication. Because sometimes it doesn't work, and I'm taking the same thing, so that doesn't make sense. If it was this pill that worked, it would work every single time, and it would work the same way, too. Yeah, it's really tricky. But we can, when we start practicing, we can make a lot of progress in a short period of time if we really commit to it. So lots of things do change. Okay, we're going to go over this next one, and then we'll take a break.
So that was all in world path.
Yes. So, okay, when we were talking about the desires, saying that the example you were giving isn't a permanent giving up of the desires. So it's not like a deep renunciation. And then when we stop meditating in these realms, the mind comes back down to where we started. The pleasure from those realms doesn't stay, and it doesn't lead to liberation on its own.
Can you not have true renunciation until you've seen emptiness directly, or can you get it sooner?
It's like, remember in one of the classes, it was like, when you think day and night of nothing, is that like reaching liberation? Yeah.
When you day and night of nothing else than getting out of suffering. I don't know if it... Because in a way, it seems like you would only have true renunciation after you've seen the way things work. Because I can't imagine being completely free of it. You know,
saying directly that this is not...
Yeah. But I think we can get really close, though, with an intellectual understanding. Because after... I think for all of us, after practicing any amount of time, we can see how we start to let go a little at a time. And over years, I can see how I've come closer to it. Not that I'm there, but I can see like the progression of it. I don't know. It makes sense to me that it wouldn't be complete renunciation until then.
And like at least sometimes I can act with more wisdom.
Mm-hmm.
Not every time, or it's not a habit, but like when something's really noticeable or I'm like in the middle of a mental affliction, I can act with more wisdom.
Yeah, and that's a great thing. It's kind of like what we were talking about going up levels and letting go of the last one. But in our practice, we also forget what we were like before. And so we don't know. And I'm not very good at keeping a journal. I think Jay keeps a journal, which is really helpful for a spiritual practice, if any of you can do it. Because then we know where we were and we know where we are now. And we can see, oh my gosh, I made a lot of progress. Because my progress, it's not like big, huge things here and there. It's very gradual and subtle. Little things shifting, you know, on a continual basis, so that I cannot even notice and think that oh, I'm not doing that well. When in fact, from where I started, if I could see where that was, it's hugely, hugely different.
Do you notice when you're around people that you haven't seen in a long time? Or like, you know, if you went to like, hung out with like a friend from college or like...
I haven't done that in so long. Have you noticed that?
Yeah.
Because you can, they seem to be in the same place as they were.
No,
and then
just
you
like,
can tell...
The way we interact with
each other. Oh my gosh, I'm
so
much better than them.
No. Like, who I used to be, you know, it's like kidding. I'm still the person I used to be to them because it's like the last time I saw you was 10 years ago, so I'm still like the 23-year-old that we...
Oh, so they're interacting with you as they did before and you can see how you were based on that.
Like
that makes sense.
Yeah, the old dynamics come back. And in a different way. It's not like it's 100% the same, right? Because
yeah.
We're both different, but... Yeah, or you're reminded, or, like, we'll talk about memories, or, like, stuff comes up with them, and it's like, oh, yeah, like, that's how things used to be, or I used to do that, or I used to treat you this way, or whatever.
Yeah.
When the memories start coming back that I don't necessarily think about on a daily basis. Like, I don't think about my college roommate almost ever, but when I'm with her, I remember all sorts of stuff.
So is it, like, is it motivating? Because you can say, oh, my gosh, I used to do that, and I would never do that now.
I guess so. It's also kind of embarrassing because, like, not the person I am anymore, but she still thinks of me in that way.
Yeah.
So, but I try not to dwell on that piece too much, but it can be embarrassing.
I think
it's not like I was this terrible person, but, you know,
mm-hmm.
or anything, but, yeah.
But we've all done things.
Yeah, that we regret,
I see it, I notice it more with myself. Just when I'm in different situations or different things come up, be like, oh yeah, that used to really piss me off and I don't care like at all anymore.
Yeah.
It's okay. That's when, and those are the times when we should pause and be really happy and rejoice that our practice is going well instead of thinking, oh yeah, this is going well. Oh, this crappy thing in my life's happening. You know, like skipping right over it to the negative, like robbing ourselves of this small little goodness that comes up. Okay. So on to Jigten Le Depe Lam. This means world beyond path. So the path which is beyond the world. This path transcends the world. And we don't give up the desire. The desire of the form realm because you're moving up into higher levels of meditation. You give it up because you understand its selflessness or its emptiness. We remove our desire for the object because of understanding how it really truly exists. So when we reach the first level of the form realm in meditation, I wonder if I misspoke. I thought it was the second level. Or maybe I took notes wrong. But here it says the first level of the form realm, then we can see emptiness directly. I thought it was the second, so I can't say for sure. Because apparently there's two different things that I have written down. So if you don't focus your attention on emptiness while you're at this level, then you'll keep doing more pleasurable meditation on higher realms. So we choose what to focus on, like focusing a telescope. And at this level, it's not necessarily a virtuous meditation. Some people use, this is what Geshe Michael says, some people use it for black magic things or negative things. It's like a place, well, it's empty, but it's like a place that's available, too. There's potential there. There's a place where there's like an opening into seeing reality the way it is. And then there's also a potential for something else there, too. It's not going to always lead to that. So once we have sufficient concentrative ability, we have to shift our focus to emptiness. Alternating between meditation, alternating our meditation between analytical and single-pointed concentration. That's why we build up both. So only seeing emptiness can remove, is the thing that can remove our desire for higher pleasure realms. And I don't think in our lineage we really have a desire for the higher pleasure realms as we've learned them, because we've always been taught that we don't want to be born there, that we're just going to use up all our good seeds and fall to lower realms. But in a way, this isn't literally, but in a way we want more and more pleasure, so we're kind of desiring that sort of realm. It's not the same thing, but... Oh, I wish Cheryl was here. Because... So, the reason that prayer works is because the virtue of asking for something beneficial creates the cause to receive it. The virtue of asking for something beneficial creates the cause to receive it. It's interesting. Okay, we already talked about that. And there's also the idea that you're trying to just empty your mind. There's this idea of meditation, and that's not the point of meditation. So there is a level of the form realm where you focus on nothing at all, and then the result is still a suffering birth. It doesn't mean that we don't try to calm our mind and put it in a neutral state so we can then focus on a virtuous object. But focusing on the breath does this. It builds up our muscle to be able to focus single-pointedly so that we move on to other things. It's not the ultimate goal. So the idea that we should just try to empty our mind isn't the answer. That's not what we're going for. We're going for that ability to be able to focus, like laser point focus and stay, so that we can then, at a certain point, when we're ready, turn our mind towards seeing reality directly or how the world is really working. How we're labeling everything, including ourself, our own thoughts, everything that we see, and how it's available to be anything else too, which is how karma works. So when we are forced to see ourselves in a Buddha paradise, that's when we're in a Buddha paradise. It's not that we're traveling from here to somewhere else, or when we're forced to see ourselves in one of the hell realms, that's when we're in one of the hell realms, when we have the karmic seeds come up for that. And we can't progress. I don't think this is always emphasized, but we can't progress through the stages of spiritual growth and practice unless we can reach deep stages of meditation. And we won't know what to do when we get there if we don't study deeply as well. We can't move between paths unless we're in a deep state of meditation. It doesn't mean that the rest of the practice doesn't matter, but that's where these things happen. They're not going to happen when we're walking around somewhere and still, you know, interacting with this world, because they're happening when our consciousness is in another realm. So that's where we're going between these different... Actually... I don't know if that's technically true, but when we're seeing emptiness directly, our consciousness is in a different realm. Accumulation, yeah. So basically meditation and study have to come together, and then we have to be virtuous too. It's good to have a balanced practice. Not all heavy, only study. Not all only meditation or only focusing on the vows, but the balance between everything, to do them all. And then you're working in a balanced and, you know, like middle pathway to getting to the goal. Instead of being extreme and only meditating, not studying, only studying, not meditating at all. Which I think I see that more. Only study, no meditation. But... Also starting where we are, so if meditation is just not working for us, finding a way to do it that will. Whatever time of day we need to do it at, however small we need to start, like Ami was saying last night, doing it every day is way more important than doing it once a week for 2 hours, something like that. We'll make a lot more progress. And to me, I like that. I like doing things a little bit every day. I don't like having one huge thing to do. That really stresses me out. So it's nice to, okay, if I do a little bit every single day, over time, the amount of time you sit and meditate will grow on its own. There might be a point where you push it a little bit to get a little longer, but over time it'll grow on its own and we'll get to these other stages. Okay. And basically the reason, so when we see ultimate reality or emptiness directly, we can no longer entertain desire or hatred. And that's what we're doing all day long. Maybe in some subtler form. Probably not hatred all day long, but dislike or pushing away irritation. And not strong desire, but maybe like, I want this. I'm going to maneuver or manipulate things so I get this, as though that's how they work, how things work. Okay, let's take a break.